tells me. Shall I use it or not? Good. I think. Oh, I'm sorry. The title of my talk is Thoughts and Reflections on the Future of Music. It's a little pretentious a title, but please don't attach any importance to it. It's just a pretext for our possible further exchange of views, and I would be very happy if you ask me questions after that, not relating necessarily to the text, but any question of general nature concerning, of course, musical problems. Much has been written and said about the degeneration of the arts in our times, about its disintegration, about its becoming stunted, or even about its path to self-annihilation. Here are a few thoughts on the subject that have occurred to me in the past few years. In the field of music, the process of disintegration began the moment Wagner wrote the first three measures of Tristan and Isolde. Thus, the first tiny crack in the granite, which seemed to be a sacrosanct and unviolated edifice, was made. The phenomenal monument of musical construction, as was the major minor scale system, evolved over the centuries through the efforts and inspirations of countless generations of composers, starting with Pérotin le Grand, was endangered indeed. Neither Wagner himself, and even less those of first rebels and violators of convention, destroyers in quotation marks, and devastators in quotation marks as well, if you will, as Chopin and Liszt, certainly couldn't have imagined nor foreseen that what took centuries of development could be brought down with such lightning speed and lead to something which may be called, with many reservations and qualifications, anti-music. The introduction of the notion of anti-music is wrought with a danger of misunderstanding, since everyone sees the dividing line between music and anti-music differently. It's not my intention to define it as I see it. Nevertheless, a classical composition belonging to anti-music is not an abstract notion to me. We see examples of such works, for instance, in the compositions of Lamont Young or Yun Pai. There are the ending stages of evolution of the concept of a piece of music. And in the process of development of this concept, the ultimate goal is the elimination of music itself. Two questions arise. First, is the history of music in the last several decades limiting itself to and only to what to that which would appear to be on a path of destruction, in quotation marks, beginning with Wagner and proceeding unto Lamont Young? And second, how should the organizers of musical life, that is, those who decide whether a piece should or should not be performed, deal with this anti-music? I will consider the second question first. It's probably less important, but also easier for me to answer. Very simply, and nonetheless categorically, I'm decidedly opposed to creating artificial barriers for the circulation of the products of art and denying the recipients, the public, access to them and justifying this action as being for the sake of aesthetic tendencies which these products represent. It's not right to hide from the public the existing currents and tendencies in art, even though they may appear to be anti-art. The public has the absolute right to know, the absolute right to know everything that happens in art throughout the world, and to a personal experience or interrelationship with it. To deny the public whatever kind of compositions immediately results in an unnatural situation. The suppressed creators grow into a stature of persecuted heroes, in quotation marks, a position they would possibly never have achieved had their creation been allowed to circulate freely. I believe that anti-art piece doesn't deserve to be endowed with the glamour of and fascination of forbidden fruit. As a co-organizer of the Warsaw Autumn Festival programs, I shall always defend the institution of the night concerts, where the most radical compositions of those composers who broke off with all known musical conventions are scheduled. The aesthetic value of these compositions is not the only criterion for selection. For who is in a position to precisely define their standards? Consideration has to be given also to whether they represent a manifestation in art which interests a certain amount of people. An example of this phenomenon is that which may be called, not in a strict sense, for instance, instrumental theatre, in other words, happenings. Being opposed to all musical taboos, I have yet another reason for this position besides the one mentioned. It's my concern that some important but difficult at present to recognize manifestation in music could be overlooked or condemned to oblivion, which could preclude that even in the most unconvincing aesthetic, some worth may be hidden and discernible only by some future generation, or that in some composition, being one would think the purest product of the last stage in the process of destruction, does contain in it some seeds for the future rebirth of music. The first question that I raised at the onset has no easy answer. The process of destruction is a phenomenon one would think to be most evident to anyone who ponders for a moment and reflects on the future of music and the road it passed, beginning with Tristan and Isolde, up to the hole in the wall made by pushing a piano by a sufficient number of performers, in quotation marks. To those who may not understand the allusion, I may only add a footnote. I'm making here the allusion to a piece by Lamantian, whose score reads, "Push a piano against a wall. If it resists, push stronger." Yet the changes taking place in the musical language and even in the aesthetics itself is only one side of the history of music of a particular era. The other side being the works themselves, created in a given period and looked upon separately and independently of historical context. The fact that no new convention lasting for at least a number of years has been able to replace the old classical one has not prevented the creation of a series of real masterpieces during our period. In making this statement, it may appear inconsistent. Yet it is only seemingly so. The value of principles and conventions which form the basis of a given art cannot per se be used as a measuring yardstick for the worth of a piece of art, because in great measure it's independent from them. Principles and conventions may be justified by the value of a piece of art itself, for which they provide the foundation. Thus, with the help of the most unconvincing, in quotation marks, and even absurd principles and conventions, it's possible to create a masterpiece. Whereas, on the other hand, even the most beautiful in itself principle, serving as a base, cannot save a kitsch for what it is. Naturally, the question immediately arises, what is a masterpiece and what is kitsch? I'm an adherent of the opinion that there are no criteria for the value of a piece of art. The deciding factor in each case is the experience of the recipient, and this is beyond the reach of objective categorization. A sum total of experiences of thousands of receivers over a period of several decades, which is encompassed in the word time, decides upon the value of a piece of art. The verdict of the recipients over the last several decades has been surprisingly positive. Thus, in spite of the process of disintegration, in quotation marks, of the classical conventions brought to an absurd state today, musical works of undeniable value and power of appeal have been and are continuing to be created. This is irrefutable evidence to the fact that the currently fragile and crumbling substance of music is subordinate to the human spirit, which is not in the least inclined to be drawn into the process of disintegration. This spiritual strength, evident in many works, leads me to believe that the crisis of the substance of music, as deeply alarming as it is after all a passing phenomenon. The greater freedom that we will ensure to the creation and propagation of the music composed today, no matter how radical, the sooner will the renaissance of musical output appear. All artificial barriers will only delay the day of overcoming the crisis. I believe wholeheartedly and most confidently that this will be achieved, and that art shall not annihilate itself. Its ardent need has been so closely connected with humanity from its inception, and it's such an essential attribute that I can only imagine the disappearance of art with the disappearance of humanity itself. So much my text. Now I'm very much hope that you will ask me some questions.
Yes, Lee.
Recently I heard Penderecki's Second Symphony, and it seemed to me that it takes its inspiration from Mahler, Strauss, and Kapsavalius, which seems also to me to be a trend of sorts. I wonder whether you could comment on that as a trend in the future of music, whether it appeals to you or not, whether
You see, my thoughts about the future of music are not these are of a prophet. Because I'm very reluctant to any prophecies. There are some phenomena that appeal to me, the other not so much. And I must confess that this going back to this, not only tradition but also imitation of the late Romantic music, is not terribly appealing to me. But still, I'm nothing against it in principle. I'm not a man of principles. I think that if a masterpiece can be made in with the means of expression of Richard Strauss, why not? If it convinces me as a work itself. So I don't think that, as I said in my little text, that any approach to the problems of the musical stuff, or musical matter, or musical substance, no matter what it is, if on the condition that the worth of a piece is half. So I don't like to criticize anybody whose works may not find the great appeal to me, like, for instance, the those of the composers who follow the trend of neo-romanticism or new romanticism, or rather old romanticism, I should say. But in principle, I'm not against it. It doesn't interest me so much, you know. And I'd like to know what would replace it in the nearest future. And I hope that there will be some more solid substance without referring to the past, but a new and solid substance. That's my reflection about this new trend, not specifically to referring to Penderecki's music, but to the trend that you just mentioned. Yes, please. Yes, again, it's difficult for me to answer your question because, as I said, I'm not terribly convinced by that trend. So also, this question should be answered negatively. That means, I think, all works that this trend made born, I think that are difficult to find a masterpiece among them. Very difficult. Well, I think it's maybe understandable reaction against the avant-garde of the 50s, where the post-Webernism was the, so to speak, fashion and obligatory for all of those who wanted to be fashion. And this reaction is understandable, but I think that it's very it's a thing that to pass probably quickly, because I can't imagine a work that could really convince. I hardly can imagine a work that could be equal in its value with, let's say, Brahms's or Bruckner's symphony. But it's just my reflection. Maybe they shouldn't be treated too seriously, after all. Suddenly I can hear, for instance, a fifth symphony of Brahms and be enchanted by it, composed by a young composer, American or Polish or whoever it would be. Yes?
Yes, my question has sort of resisting these pressures becomes kind of political in spite of itself, sometimes to the extent of becoming socialist realism in reverse. So with this in mind, I was wondering if you could compare for us the Warsaw Autumn Festivals in 1980 and 1981 with, say, the Autumn Festival of last year, 1982.
And 1982 didn't take place. It's the main, it didn't take place. It was impossible to organize our festival. We had no means of communication with other countries, no telephone possible, no telephones, no telex. Oh, I see.
Oh, no telex. Yes, it's been recorded. I'm sorry, I forgot it. So it was technically impossible. This year we are still preparing it. We don't know whether it will take place or not, because there are many factors that come into play. But I've very much hope that it will be possible. The political pressure, well, I think the music is maybe the least endangered, because politicians are interested in are the semantic kinds of art, like especially mass art, like film, TV, in a certain extent theater, and certainly literature, but not music, because it's a fairly abstract art, and one can always say that a piece of music doesn't express anything concrete. It's asemantic art, unless you use a text for a cantata against the socialist realism, for instance. Well, Warsaw Autumn is a very important factor in our musical life. It opened the door for everything which is going on all over the world, and maybe it's the most wide a festival, because it combines together the all possible tunes, and those night concerts that I mentioned are still in our plans, and there will be certainly some electronic music, classical and new, some computer music, some maybe different other trends of the kind that will be represented in night concerts. And probably the general physiognomy of the festival will not change. Yes. But yes, I have been asked that question, and I always wonder in what way you imagine that the government could pressure me to compose something or not to compose something, because it's an understandable question for me. They can't just come to my to my home and touch with a pistol my head with a pistol and say, compose a symphony for Stalin, or I don't know whom. No, it's impossible. So I don't understand how it can be. Of course, what it can be is the performances. That means the piece may not be allowed to be performed. That just happened to me when I wrote the first symphony and completed it in 1948, and after some performances it was not allowed to be performed anymore, as a typical example of formalism that I have never understood what it could mean. Yes, because it's a very vague term. You can use it in different, in various ways. I have never come to an established one, to a definition what really formalism is. So I can't imagine the possibility of compelling me to compose anything or not to compose anything. So the only problem is in the performances. But up to now, and beginning with, let's say, late 50s, when my first symphony was first performed after this period of 10 years. Since then, I don't think there were any pressure to, or any fact and any occasion for my works to be forbidden to play. Yes. Pardon? What?
What would you say that minimalist music says about the culture of our time? And on your list of masterpieces, would there be any minimalist composition?
Well, you see, I'm not terribly acquainted with just that trend. I know a few works, and they were not terribly appealing to me. But to imagine how a masterpiece could be composed in this trend, it's not my business, because I'm not writing things like that. So it's the business of those who do that. But I don't think that it's impossible to do it. So it's just difficult for me to imagine, because I'm not terribly interested in that procedure. But everything may happen in very unexpected circumstances. Yes. Yes. Please. Yep.
Composers in Poland in particular in the 60s developed a great deal of new notation, non-traditional notation.
Yeah.
How would you say the notational devices that were devised affected the course of your music?
My music, or music of my fellow composers?
Well, actually either, but I...
Yes. You see, I think that this new notation, there are many methods of writing down music, graphic notation, for instance, it doesn't appeal to me especially, and I think it's more and more abandoned by composers. And especially introduction of new signs that are not absolutely necessary are now more and more avoided by the composers. To give you the example of mentioned by yourself, my fellow composer, Krzysztof Penderecki, who never bothered about the difficulties of possible performing his music when he was very young. But when he began conducting, he began writing much easier for the players, you know. Well, why? I think it's a very wise decision, and he admits to to make it. And I think, as for me, I was always, my ambition was always to write playable music. That means that without any unnecessary difficulties. And especially now, I'm trying to still reduce new kind of notations. Still in my piece, Liverpool Orchestra, is a different notation for ad libitum sections and a traditional one for conducted ones. But now I abandoned even that. I'm still save time, rehearsal time, in writing in a most conventional way, because I don't think it really adds something to the final result. That means music that sounds. It may add something to the reading of a score, and the scores that are whose destiny is to be only read, so maybe new notation, and even most extravagant notation, may be justified. But for playing music, I think I'm on the side of those who want to reduce unnecessary new signs to the necessary minimum. Yes, please.
In the past,
Now it is partly true today, because just in here in this when this minimal music were mentioned, I think there are some examples that makes that music in a way associated with pop.